Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining me on Moving Mountains with Sasha. I'm Sasha Legault, your host. Today we have a great episode. You will meet Naresh Vusa, the author and marketing guru. He's the author of 50 Shades of Marketing and Podcastnomics. A reporting journalist turned media, marketing, and publishing entrepreneur, Vusa has stints at J.P. Morgan Chase as a financial analyst and CNN Radio as a producer before launching a successful online radio podcasting network for one of the largest independent investment publishers in the world. He also helped build and promote a startup online precious metals brokerage. In his spare time, he loves working out to loud music, reading self-help books, and newsletters. Without giving away too much, I would love to welcome Naresh to the show. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Sasha. It's a pleasure to be on.
You are also a graduate from Duke University School of Business, and before you embraced college, did you have an idea of what profession you wanted to embark upon, and what made you gravitate towards business?
I'll say, Sasha, nobody ever has a plan on what they want to do with their life, especially when they're 17 years old applying to college. So what I'm doing today, I had no idea that the job even existed. And my job actually did not even exist 15 years ago. And 15 years from now, my job that I currently do may not exist 15 years from now. So to answer your question, I had no intention of doing what I do today, which is online business, e-commerce, online marketing, digital business, basically just doing stuff online. I had no clue that I would be doing that. Now, I did go to school. I did study business. I do actually have a couple of business degrees, undergrad and graduate. Again, I did not expect to go into online digital business because really I was more interested in becoming a reporter and becoming a journalist, a producer, director, reporter in TV, print, radio, et cetera. Now, this was before the financial crisis, when the media industry, or when there were, you know, still decent jobs within the media and publishing industries. And that's obviously changed and things have evolved, and I still work in media. I kind of took the skill sets that I learned in college and in graduate school and applied them to today's digital environment, and voila, that's what we have now.
What if your expertise happens to be marketing? And still today, in today's age, whether it's individuals or businesses, they interchangeably use marketing and advertising, thinking that's the same thing, but they're two distinct, I would say, niches. How would you define marketing?
So let me first tell you what advertising is. Advertising is a form of marketing. So marketing is kind of the broad shell, and within marketing you have advertising, public relations, social media, etc. So advertising is a form of marketing. Marketing is really the idea of getting anything out into the public. So by public, it can mean, you know, your friends. It can mean the public, you know, sphere on a much grander scale. The idea of marketing is to get something out there with the end goal of selling something, whether it's selling a product, selling a brand, selling a business, et cetera. That's what marketing is. And advertising is one form of marketing where people pay money to get something out there.
So while we raise awareness through marketing for a product or service, would you say with the advent of social media versus the power of word of mouth, would you say the word of mouth is still powerful and it overrides social media?
Absolutely. So word of mouth marketing is the best type of marketing you can have, largely because the power of the word of mouth is much greater than just kind of blindly advertising on, let's say, social media. Now, I don't want to, there are times when social media and word of mouth marketing mean the same thing. So, for example, if somebody posts on Facebook saying, Facebook is a social medium, if somebody posts saying, I'm looking for recommendations on what to do if I visit Cuba, now people can start responding on social media and they can say, you know, you should eat here, you should visit this place. If you want to go out, you should go here. If you want to stay in a hotel or an Airbnb, you should consider this. That is word of mouth marketing, because even though it is on a social medium, you have your friends, confidants, your Facebook network responding to you and giving you suggestions. So yes, word of mouth marketing is still more powerful than really any other type of marketing. But with that being said, the ways word of mouth marketing are being used today are significantly different. So they're now being used through social media, through text messaging, through email. So that's just kind of the difference between the two, but also the similarities between the two as well.
Now, when new and established entrepreneurs keep refining their business plan, whether they come up with it from scratch or they're capitalizing upon what they initially started out with, one area of the business plan that sometimes people discount is the marketing aspect, because they focus on operations and finance to prove to the banks that this is how we're going to go earn money. For those who include the marketing aspect in the plan, what are some key variables that they should include in that section?
Well, the marketing operations and financial aspects of a business are all tied together. So when you go out marketing, you have to keep in mind the term return on investment, ROI, which again ties into the financial aspect of the business. No good marketing plan, or I should say a marketing plan, is not viable if you can't prove that there is going to be a return on the investment. So people need to, when they formulate their marketing plans, they need to keep ROI completely in mind, and everything that they do should have some kind of direct return on the investment. So if you're, you know, looking for a loan from a bank, for example, or looking to raise money from venture capital, you want to be able to show a marketing plan with data and numbers and statistics that show that the money that you're looking to raise is going to generate even more money in returns. So to give you an example, let's say you're looking to market a widget, and you decide that you are going to sell the product to an email list that you're going to rent out. You're going to rent out an email list, and with the hope that people on this list are going to turn into buyers of your widget product. And now let's say that you run the campaign and the widget costs $10 and you spend $100 on the marketing to rent this list. So in this case, if each widget costs $10, then it'll take ten sales just to break even. And if you can show, investors, show the bank or whoever you're looking to raise funding from, if you can show them that, hey, I figured out this marketing process, I know that I can rent, you know, email list X or run, you know, this pay-per-click campaign on Google, and show them the numbers that, you know, not only are you going to break even, but over the long haul, even though the product costs $10, the customer lifetime value, so the customer might buy more products from you because they bought that one product. They might buy complementary products, or if it's a subscription type of product or a product like an iPhone that comes out every year, they might continue to buy more products from you in the future or renew their product every year. So even though it costs $10 up front, or you're making $10 up front, really over the life of the customer, you could be making north of $100 if you take that into account. So you have to take all these data and numbers into account and tie it into your marketing plan. And really, I think there's so many marketers out there who they're almost blind when it comes to the effects and the actual return on investment. They just say, oh, yeah, let's just spend a lot of money on Google pay-per-click, or let's spend a lot of money on Facebook advertising. And they have no idea. They're not tracking the numbers. They're not tracking the statistics. They just assume, oh, everyone's on Facebook, so, you know, that's where we got to be, without testing things out and without actually looking at the numbers. So it's incredibly important that people do that and take the numbers into account.
You also touch upon return on investment in your book, because the concept of hiring public relations firms, and some of them don't keep up with the 21st century, that they're still going about their operations and strategies from decades ago. What are a few key elements that individuals should seek out in a public relations firm before hiring one?
Well, you're talking about a chapter in my book called The New PR, and that chapter was actually turned into an ebook, which is called just that, The New PR, which is available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Audible, et cetera. Now, I wrote that chapter. It's actually it's probably the most controversial chapter in the book, because I go at the public relations industry. The public relations industry has really turned into a scam industry, because these large PR firms charge a ton of money in retainers. I'm talking four figures, in some cases five figures a month in retainers. And what are they doing for you? They're getting you interviews on no-name AM, FM, terrestrial radio stations. They'll be lucky to get you on a national network. And if they do get you on a national network, it'll be like at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning. You know, it won't be prime time where everyone's watching. And most importantly, they fit the profile of the person I mentioned earlier, of somebody who just says, oh, being on TV is, you know, people watch TV, so, you know, let's get you on TV, and, you know, it'll be good for marketing, without actually quantifying the return on such a campaign. So, Sasha, it could be even more beneficial for guests to come on your podcast, your online radio show, than it would be for them to go on CNN, you know, really on a weekday or any time where people are passively listening. When it comes to online, the future of PR is really online. And in the podcasting space, you have active listeners, people who actually hit the subscribe button on their iPhone, or who follow a host very closely because they're huge fans. And as a result, you get active listeners or active viewers. This is something the public relations industry doesn't understand, because in the 90s, 80s, 90s, there was no such thing as a podcast. There was no such thing as online radio. So that's just a little background on the PR profession, the exorbitant rates that they charge for very little return. And if you ask most publicists, if you say, okay, you're charging this much money, but can you tell me the return on your client's investment? And they won't even know what that means. If you ask them to quantify numbers where, let's say, you're the CEO of a company that sells widgets, if you ask them to quantify the numbers on, okay, well, you publicize the CEO of this company that sells widgets, can you tell me how many widgets he sold as a result of the campaign, the PR campaign? They either won't answer it because they don't know it, or they won't answer it because very likely the number was zero or maybe one. So that's just a little background on the PR industry. Now, of course, there are some good publicists out there who might know what return on investment is and what it means to do PR according to ROI, but I'm very plugged into the industry. I would say the vast majority, vast meaning more than 90%, that's a number I can say with some research and some certainty, more than 90% of the publicists out there will have no idea what that means, and they'll have no idea what the end goal is in a publicity campaign.
In your book, you also share some tidbits, and the one that got my attention, and it seemed really valid, that people may want to consider buying ad space on porn sites. So what products or services would you recommend that would work well to capture attention, or would any product or service capture a person's attention? Because porn itself is such an industry that it's a part of some large population's lifestyle that people go there one way or the other.
Yeah, so this was another popular chapter in my book, and you know, without getting a little too graphic, advertising on porn sites and or pornographic sites obviously carries much of a stigma. So if you think about it, if you think about, okay, there's a stigma to advertising on pornographic sites, that actually presents a pretty big opportunity, because if people are too afraid to advertise on such sites, then you have less competition. So in the book, I give a case study of a company that tested advertising on pornographic sites, and they had tremendous success. Now, before I get to that case study, I want to share some data and statistics with you, and to give you an idea of how popular porn sites are. 30% of all internet traffic goes to pornographic sites or other, you know, like Playboy, which is not pornographic, but is a sexually explicit site. So to put that number into context, 30% of all traffic goes to these sites. That's more than CNN, ESPN, and Twitter, Facebook, Netflix, Amazon, all those sites and media outlets combined. So that gives you an idea of how much traffic is going to porn sites. So if you combine the fact that there's a ton of traffic going to pornographic sites and mix that with the stigma of advertising on porn sites, that presents an even greater opportunity on porn sites. So as ridiculous as it sounds, the book covers a case study of a company called Eat24, who was a food delivery company, and they advertise on porn sites. What they did was they did in video advertisements, banner advertisements, et cetera, and the results were pretty staggering. Their porn campaign reached a new market at a very low cost. The company is still advertising on porn sites, and they're doing it at much lower CPM rates, CPC rates, cost per click rates, than, say, advertising on Google AdWords or Facebook. So that's just an example of the benefits of advertising on porn sites. And I think businesses who aren't afraid of the stigma should certainly give it a try.
You referenced the low cost. Do you feel the fees are more affordable on those porn sites because people are hesitant to even go there and market their product or service?
Yeah, so I mentioned the stigma earlier. That's definitely, it's a supply and demand issue. So the lower the number of advertisers you have, the less competition there is for ad space, and therefore that's going to drive down the cost of the advertising. Now, there isn't, people aren't afraid to go to the sites. They're just, businesses are afraid to market on the sites. So the proof is in the pudding that the engagement and the traffic is still extremely high to porn sites, and that likely is not going to change anytime soon. As the saying goes, sex sells. There's a reason why the book 50 Shades of Grey has sold, I think, now more than 200 million copies. That's more copies than the Harry Potter series sold during its first 10 years in existence. And 50 Shades of Marketing has been around for about 5 years. So yeah, sex still sells. It's not a fad when it comes to pornography. There hasn't been a drop-off in user engagement since the internet porn became a big deal at the turn of the millennium. So again, the traffic is going to be there. The cost per impression, or the cost CPM, cost per click, CPC, those have remained stagnant for the most part, because companies are not as willing to advertise on these sites.
In your opinion, would it be better to advertise a service on such sites or a product, or it wouldn't matter?
So in my opinion, I don't really think it matters. The idea here is your competition is very low. It's not like advertising on Facebook or Google AdWords, where you have to compete with so many different people. The important thing, however, whether it's a product or a service, the important thing is that the creative and the copy should be relevant to porn. So in the case of Eat24, the case study that I told you about before, company that delivered sandwiches, they had a creative. So they were a food company, but their creative was so tied into the sexual theme. So for example, one of their banners was a kind of a risque banner of a sandwich, and the colors were risque, the creative was risque. They had a woman who held a sandwich in her hand, and then they had copy that said, "Want BLT with your BDSM?" question mark. "Want BLT with your BDSM?" So there's an example of a food company that has absolutely nothing to do with sex or porn or anything in that industry. They tied in, their sandwiches, in this case, a BLT sandwich with a sexual reference, BDSM. So again, you have to be creative, and any company can find ways to be creative to tie it into this platform. If you're a sandwich company and you advertise on a porn site and you just say, "Click here to get a free buy," "click here to get a buy one get one free sandwich," the engagement probably isn't going to be as high, because it's not very relevant to your audience. But again, going back to the audience, this is a very qualified, engaging audience. These aren't people who are on the site by accident. The bounce rates are low, session lengths are high. It consists of a predominantly male audience. The people visiting them are engaged and visiting with an intention. So you're getting a pretty qualified audience.
You spent quite some time at CNN Radio. What was one of the best lessons that you acquired from that experience?
Well, I was there at CNN Radio during a time of great media consolidation. So this was in 2009, 2010, and CNN Radio actually ended up selling the radio station to Clear Channel. So my time there, CNN, let's just say, was a very, I mean, as people probably know now, CNN is a left-wing kind of liberal news network. And when the station, or after the station was sold to Clear Channel, it's almost like a weight was lifted from many people's backs. I mean, I was just a producer there, but the show hosts, the salespeople, it's almost like a huge weight was lifted off their backs. And a new weight was added on in clear channel communications, but it wasn't as stringent a weight as before. So my experience there was good. I produced a couple of shows that were under the CNN radio platform, specifically out of Dallas-Fort Worth. It was really an old media business model. So there aren't too many stations like that available today. AM, FM is a dying, dying business. Every more and more media is going online. That's really where the listeners are now, whether it's podcasting, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio like your show, TuneIn, Stitcher, Player.fm, SoundCloud, et cetera. That's where it's going now. So when I was there, I kind of saw the death of radio right in front of me. I saw listeners leaving, you know, on a weekly basis, going for alternative, you can say alternative news, or for, you know, new ways to consume content in news media. So that experience definitely helped me understand the trend. And it also helped me understand, or because I understood the trend, it helped me as an entrepreneur really get into the nitty-gritty of online and digital publishing, whether it was podcasting or financial newsletters or just publishing, investment publishing as a whole.
Was it after your CNN experience where you were discovered by Aura Publishing online on LinkedIn?
Yes. Yep. So actually, what happened was I was in graduate school at Duke University, as you mentioned earlier, and a company, Agora, well, it was the largest franchise within Agora Publishing, Stansberry Research. They were looking for somebody who had a background in media and radio, but who also understood the financial industry. So they just went on LinkedIn, typed in some keywords. I don't know what they typed in, but they typed in some keywords, and I was one of like three people who popped up. And so they contacted me and hired me as a consultant to start an online financial radio network. And that ended up turning into the Stansberry Radio Network. And 7 months later, after I graduated, I moved up to Baltimore to handle that project.
As we start to wrap up, what is next on the horizon? Are you working on a new book, a new podcast? What will be happening?
Yeah, so my company, Krish Media and Marketing, we've been in business for more than 4 years now, and it's been a great experience, and we're always looking for new clients to help with their online business needs. We have solutions for anything online or digital, whether it's podcasting, online marketing, book publishing, et cetera. If there's something online that a client needs, we have solutions. I'm also working on a book that's going to be out later this year, and it's about the role that the digital marketplace played in the recent 2016 election, which obviously propelled President Trump to win. But the online marketplace, the online digital media, played a huge role in that election and helping him win. So that's what the book is largely about. And that's really about it as far as my business, my work, and what's coming next.
And since Sasha Talks focuses on spirituality and who people are before what they do, What is the best piece of advice that you have received and it has served you well?
Well, when it comes to, I can give you two different answers. So I'll tell you one that's more business related, and I'll tell you one that's more spiritually related. So let's start with the business related one. Probably the most important thing that I learned is a concept of focus. And focus not meaning sitting down in front of your computer and doing your work. But that's one aspect of focus. The other aspect of focus is really targeting the most important areas or aspects of the business or of a project and only focusing on those things and not even thinking about the other things. So earlier we were talking about marketing, and I brought up, in my experience, the email list or email marketing has been the most important form of marketing with the highest ROI. And so there's so many other forms of marketing, social media, AdWords, et cetera. But if you're truly focused and you're only going to focus on the email side and really market the heck out of that so that you can get really positive ROI. So that's what I mean by focus in business. But there's also on the other side, I want to talk about the most important thing that I learned spiritually, which is being mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually healthy. And this comes from the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Being emotionally healthy is really more about having good people around you, whether it's in your business or personally in your personal life, having a good spouse, having good friends, people who you enjoy being around who are not going to bring you down or who make you angry, because dealing with such nonsense is such a distraction that it brings you down as a person and it hurts you in all facets of life. So nonsense is always a distraction. It's best to cut it out. Being physically healthy is really eating well. In my case, I eat well. I don't eat, you know, the best, but I eat well. I really keep a lot of the bad stuff out of my diet, largely because I'm a strict vegetarian, and that's for really moral and philosophical reasons. But it also helps me stay physically fit. It cuts out a lot of the bad stuff that other people eat in this country. And then it also includes, physically speaking, exercising. So if that's, doing some stretches at home every day, if that's doing yoga and meditation, or if that's weightlifting or playing basketball, tennis, whatever it might be, exercise is very important, not just physically, but it affects you emotionally and spiritually and mentally as well. On the mental side, that just consists of exercising your brain and thinking, really, just like you exercise physically your muscles, if you're weightlifting or playing basketball, the brain needs exercises too. And so I exercise my brain by writing. Writing really tests the creativity of the brain. I look at the brain kind of like a muscle, and you need to work out that muscle. So writing is always a good thing. And the second thing that I do is I play chess. So I play, I have a group where I live in Florida that plays every Wednesday. So I play chess with them, and then I also play through an app and online with friends. So that's a good way to exercise the brain and to test yourself mentally. Then the final kind of area from the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, is spiritual health. So spiritual health does not mean religious health. It does not mean that you need to join a religion or a cult and pray to God every day. That could be a part of it. That does kind of stretch your spiritual muscles. But being spiritually healthy simply means being thankful for just being thankful for life, being thankful to being alive. And, it could be just looking at the sky and saying thanks to nobody, not to any higher being, not to anyone else, just saying thank you to yourself. That's good enough for spiritual well-being. Now, of course, you can do the other stuff if it's important to you. You can get into religion and do the meditation or praying or whatever it might be, but that's not necessarily required. I think just being thankful for oneself and for life is good enough for spiritual well-being. So all four of these areas, they're not mutually exclusive. They're connected to each other. So being physically healthy affects your mental health, which affects your spiritual health, which affects, your overall health. So So it's very important that all four of these areas are tested every day. And before you know it, it almost becomes a part of who you are. So initially, for the first few months, if you're looking to improve in each of these facets, you might think, you know, something in my life might change and I might give up on one and, you know, I can't do this forever. But after 3 or 4 months, you get used to testing these four different areas and they become a part of who you are. And it's just, I just find it to be a much healthier way of living life. You don't get angry as much. You may not even get angry at all moving forward. You're able to brush things off quickly. You build resilience. You're more focused on what's most important to you, whether it's work or family or play or whatever it might be. It's all very, very beneficial.
I love how you share these examples because it defines integrated wellness. And one fun question before we leave, you love exercising to loud music as I do, but what type of music do you listen to?
I listen, my musical taste is, some people say that it's just not very good. It's that it sucks, but I enjoy top 40 music. I enjoy hip hop. I enjoy, a little tiny bit of country music, but it's, I'm actually more of like a top 40, like popular music type of guy. So that's what I like. And then hip hop as well, but I'm not really like a niche listener of music. I don't have like a favorite artist and I don't, you know, I go to concerts once in a while, but I'm not like an avid music enthusiast by any means. So, you know, the top 40 will do for me. That keeps me going when I'm, you know, exercising or working or whatever. That's good enough for me.
Hey, variety is a great thing. You are welcome to share with the audience where they could find you.
So if folks want to find my books, we talked about 50 Shades of Marketing and the new PR. The books are available on Amazon. Just type in my name, Naresh Vissa. All the books are available in Kindle, paperback, audiobook, Barnes & Noble as well, iTunes, Audible, etc. And I'll even give a special deal to your listeners. If they want the books free of charge, email me at Naresh, N-A-R-E-S-H, at NareshVissa.com, N-A-R-E-S-H-V-I-S-S-A.com. If they email me there and say that they want a free book, I'll send them a promo code so they can get the audiobook versions of any of the books completely free of charge. I'll send the promo codes and they can do that. If your listeners want to get on my free newsletter that shares online business, digital business, e-commerce, online marketing tips, tricks, and strategies, NareshVissa.com, NareshVissa.com. They can get that newsletter completely free of charge, and it's got a lot of good tidbits in there. So that's how listeners can get in contact with me, visit my sites, or find out more about me.
Wonderful. Naresh, it was a delight having you today, and I hope you get to return in the future to share your new projects. So I do want to wish you well.
It's been great, Sasha. I really enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you. I want to thank all of the audience for joining me. This segment will be published on other websites as well. I'm proud to say that Sasha Talks belongs to 17 to 20 directories as of the last 9 months. So keep an eye out. Join radiosasha.blogspot.com. Find me at Coach Lago. And if you're looking for more media, you could go to sashatalks.com, click on the media, and there is a YouTube channel, and there is great material waiting there for you. Thank you for joining me. Have a wonderful day.